Welcome to Nevermore, the podcast of the Three Little Sisters Publishing House. Today on the podcast with us is Kaylee Bray from Damsels, Dice, and Everything Nice. Kaylee is a Juilliard graduate from Ottawa, Canada, a lifelong nerd. She's been playing Dungeons & Dragons for over 12 years. She is the creator of Damsels, Dice, and Everything Nice, a princess RPG parody. Her full bio will be available on our website during Fairy Tale Month, which you can check out at www.thethree3littlesisters.com. Welcome to the program, Kaylee. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So before we begin, I just want to say how much of a fan I am of your YouTube channel. Before we had video games and all these other forms of entertainment, I was a huge board game fan, and I certainly recall when Dungeons & Dragons came out. But for those who don't remember those days, can you explain to us what tabletop RPG is?
So it is really just collaborative storytelling. It's a group of people around a table led by a game master, or in the case of Dungeons and Dragons, a dungeon master. And they know what the story is, no different plot hooks, but they build a story with combat, with their players who make decisions assisted by rolling dice or some other kind of chaos element that will usually tell the story in an unpredictable way.
Awesome. And I believe that these games roughly came around the 90s or so, probably a little bit before that. And they were extremely popular for a very long time, even having people, you know, fully creating games of their very, very own. So what inspired you to use the format that you guys are using at Damsels and Dice?
So I realized that my friend group consisted of professional princesses and professional Dungeons and Dragons players or other RPG players. I thought that would be a hilarious matchup. And it was a story I really wanted to tell, and I wanted to be the first one to tell it. I was surprised no one had done it yet, so I just decided to go for it.
And it is really adorable to see the princesses playing in such a way as this. I think that a lot of people connect to Disney princesses, especially considering that Disney really markets the princess or the princess motif to girls, especially. But a lot of people are really digging the whole new form of princess that we've seen in movies like Frozen and Moana, where you have a much stronger female role model. Is that one of the reasons why you chose princesses to sort of participate in Dungeons and Dragons?
It is a reason. I really like the idea of these quote-unquote damsels in distress, especially being given a kind of agency that maybe they didn't have before. And what better way than be able to retell your own story or have agency in your own adventure? And so being able to bring characters that maybe are classically more considered a damsel in distress or not heroic kind of character and give them the chance to be heroic, I think is a really interesting.
It certainly is, especially when girls get to see that princesses can be a lot stronger. When you read the original Grimm's Brothers myths or some of the original fairy tales, they certainly made women seem very helpless and not able to defend themselves or protect themselves. But now that we have a lot more women writers coming out and explaining fairy tales from different angles, we can see that princesses actually can be quite strong and even save the prince on their own. They don't need anyone to really do that for them. How did you convince everyone and yourself really to get into character and sustain that role of the princess that you're playing?
Well, that's not hard. You offer your friends the opportunity to play a princess. That's all you really need to do.
Did you guys do that a lot when you were kids, you know, dress up and sort of be someone else?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, make-believe is a huge staple of my life, and it has been since probably before I could speak. And as I said before, all of these women are either, they come from specifically princess performer background or a gaming background. So having that, it was
easy. It was an easy fit. Do you guys have any acting background or you yourself that helped you sort of do this? I mean, you mentioned that you guys or some of you are professional princess performers, but have any of you acted in more traditional theater type roles?
Oh, absolutely. So as you mentioned earlier, I'm a Juilliard graduate. So I went to the Juilliard School for acting. I am a classically trained theater professional. And most of us are, we're in LA, so most of us are in the entertainment industry in some form of another. Most have been on camera, on film, doing voiceover. It's our profession.
That's amazing. So at this point, we're going to just take a quick break. And this episode of the Nevermore podcast has been brought to you by Mobile Sounds. Contact Mobile Sounds for all your DJ needs. They have a Facebook page called Mobile Sounds DJ. They are a Canadian DJ providing music for all your events, and they are located in Northern Ontario. Contact them for all your DJ needs. And we're back. So as we were mentioning before, we were talking about what experience sort of lent itself to this type of role playing. What is your favorite thing to do while playing Damsels and Dice?
In the game, you mean?
In the game, yes.
When I run for my players, and Damsels and Dice isn't a live play. It's a scripted. So, but I have run games for my cast just to help them practice. Some of them aren't as Dungeons or RPGs as others. So bringing everybody up to the same speed, I've run a couple of games for them, and we'll be doing more in the future for on some streaming channels as well. My favorite thing to do when I run those games, when I play those games with those girls, is just to listen to them and let them completely turn my story on its head and make these wild and crazy decisions and teach me something about where the story is going to go.
And are any of the princesses that attend the games super competitive when they play?
Yes, Rowan Hall, the girl who plays the spellcasting rogue, is incredibly competitive.
Ooh, the spellcasting rogue. Well, of course, you have to be competitive when you're casting spells all over the place, but it's fun to see that people are competitive when they play. My daughter is an epically competitive player when she plays any game around here, and so she will take you down in any tabletop game. She will try to win, even if she has to do it underhandedly. She figures out sneaky ways to win and convince you that... She is the ultimate player, especially when it comes to Monopoly. She could go on for 4 days on a Monopoly game. How do you resolve your differences if players lose during a round?
I'm not sure how familiar you are with Dungeons & Dragons or RPGs specifically, but you can't win or lose at Dungeons & Dragons. There's not really, I mean, there's experience points you can gain, but there's no points, there's no losing. I mean, your character could die, I guess, but then that's a storytelling moment. Everything is a storytelling moment. So when I say that I have characters that are competitive, want to steal something from another player first, or they want to kill the monster first, or they just like to poke and prod and see what reactions they can get from other players. And that's just all part of the story. So listening and balancing and making sure one gets their moment to do what they want, to really let their own character shine. That's being a good game master and finding that way to build that story so that everyone is served in some way, whether it's being a little competitive or being able to role play or being able to find that cool piece of treasure. It's an adventure.
Right. And I think that applies when you're playing regular board games, too, you know, working out how to make this into not really a loss, but a way to shake hands and kind of go, wow, you really played well this time. Like, next time I'm going to bring it and I'm going to be even harder on you. It's a tough lesson for especially children to learn when they lose their first time in a board game. I think they take it so personally. And it's important to see that loss is not personal. It's just this one time, and you can play another game, you can do something different, and you learn different strategies to play. And I'm sure that applies to Dungeons and Dragons to some degree, because you're learning different strategies along the way. Mm-hmm. How do you guys engage with your fans to promote the series?
There's a couple of different ways. We run our Indiegogo, which has really helped us create more episodes. Our social media campaigns have been really active. We have a lot of fans commenting on photos and reaching out to us to let us know the parts of the shows that they like. Our YouTube is also very, very active, and so grateful that all of the comments so far have been incredibly positive and lovely. We get a lot of engagement from fans telling us that their kids, especially their daughters, are either Dungeons and Dragons and are so excited to learn how to play, or are already veteran players of Dungeons and Dragons at 6 or 7 years old and so proud to tell all of their friends at school that, well, the princesses play Dungeons and Dragons, so I get to play Dungeons and Dragons, and it's cool that I play Dungeons and Dragons. So getting to see that we inspire people ends on that level.
And that's amazing, because I think it's really cool for children to get engaged in something that their parents might remember or recall. And also that nostalgic feeling of doing a family type game where everybody can get involved, and you're inspiring that by coming together, showing people at a table. I think that's it is not something we see that often in society right now. You know, that together time, whether it's friends or family coming around a table for one common thing, is a rare sight. And I think that's inspiring some other people to be like, oh, you know what we should do? We should take up Dungeons and Dragons or some kind of role playing, or maybe just get our kids interested in board games. I mean, having something away from television that's focused and does strategy and problem solving is a really good thing. For children to learn, and even adults too. It's fun to remember what it was like to be kids and play, you know, Sorry or Chutes and Ladders. And these games can be played at any age. You don't have to watch the age that's recommended on your game. You can just let your children play. And as they progress and get older, they can learn more complex games. So with that in mind, we're just going to take a little quick break number two. Last month was Alcohol Addiction Month, and the Three Little Sisters released two titles by famed Canadian author Tabitha Todd. These Chains and Junked focus on the relationships of families affected by alcohol. You can find these two titles at www.thethreelittlesisters.com. That's the number three, littlesisters.com. All right, and we're back with Kaylee, and she is the host of Damsel's Dice and Everything Nice. And we are continuing in our interview on her web series and some other things that we're talking about during Fairy Tale Month. So how has crowdfunding really allowed you guys to continue providing such a series as the one that you're providing?
We depend on it completely. So our weed costs $10,000 to make if everyone is being paid their full rate and no one is doing me any favors. So it's an incredibly expensive process for $10,000 for 8 minutes of material. So our fans have been incredibly generous. We are so incredibly lucky.
Yeah, it does look like an exceedingly expensive production when you have all the cameras and lights, and it's very professionally put together. I was really impressed with the quality of the production, and to hear that it costs that much is certainly a daunting figure. So it's important that crowdfunding really becomes a source for people like you and for us too, in that, you know, we rely on fans, we rely on readers, we rely on people to get engaged. And even if it's with your pocketbook, that really helps. And I totally hope that lots of people go out and support Damsels and Dice. I think what they're doing is really amazing, and it gives people a different view of how to engage in different types of communities. And this is just, it's a fabulous series and people should check it out. So how does planning a game like this work, and what's involved really in planning something like Damsels and Dice?
Planning a Dungeons and Dragons game or planning the series?
Well, let's do both. Let's talk about planning the game first, and then we'll talk about planning the series.
So planning a game is hours and hours. I mean, it's honestly, they're not that different. It just one of them requires a lot more accessories. So as far as planning a game, you just really need to know the kind of story you're telling. If you're planning on doing any kind of combat or encounter, there's some number crunching you have to do depending on the amount of players you've got, making sure that those kind of encounters are interesting and difficult enough for the players, but not too difficult that they'll get discouraged or all of their characters will die. Knowing what kind of non-player characters or NPCs that you're looking to include, and knowing what they sound like. I'm a voice actor, so I always want to make sure that my NPCs sound interesting or engaging for the players. Knowing where you want the story to go, and then having a lot of backup plans so that when the characters inevitably go off on their own tangent, you're ready to follow them wherever they choose to go.
That's amazing. And I think it's super interesting to hear that there's a lot of work that goes into something like this. And obviously it sounds like there's a lot of work. So including Princess Leia, I actually, when I looked at the series, I thought that was a really interesting choice. And I mean, I know why I would include her, but why did you guys decide on including someone from the Star Wars universe in the game? And how really have your fans reacted to seeing someone as strong as Leia take part?
So when I first had the idea for the series, I made a Facebook post that says, hey, if I did something where we had princess characters playing Dungeons and Dragons, who would want to join me? I got an overwhelming response from all of my entertainment friends. And so I said, okay, everybody who wants to join, pick a princess. And who was originally part of that thread has been involved in the project in some way since then. But I'm open always to, you know, make things interesting. Star Wars, so Marvel Universe even, there was ideas of which princess characters could be, you know, translated into the story as well. Black Panther came out right, was finished. We're a little disappointed in because that would have been a fun character to include. But we are fans as far as response to Leia or any other kind of character involved in the show that she's included. But we always also get a lot of requests from our fans. Oh, why wasn't this princess included? Or what about this princess? And
yeah, everybody has their own favorite, right? I mean, you can only squeeze so many princesses into one game. And I'm sure that a few people probably have asked you for really obscure ones too. Like, I was really surprised to see the one from the Atlantis movie, because to me, that's not one of my favorite Disney movies. I'm sure a lot of people loved it. It was one of those ones that I watched and I was like, okay, but it wasn't one of my, that has indelibly left a mark in my brain, like Sleeping Beauty or Snow White. So I thought it was very interesting that you guys included that.
That's because it was my favorite.
And I don't blame you. It is a cool, like, she's a cool character in the movie, and she probably could have been a standalone movie by herself with all that stuff, because she was really strong and a strong Disney character. And I feel like she was kind of, you know, not really given the spotlight like other princesses have been. But maybe as they're remarketing and making, you know, live act, well, that would be an interesting live action. Let's go under the water, kids. But to see something like that is kind of interesting. Do you ever get any requests for ones that are so obscure? You're like, which princess is that?
No one stumped me yet. We had Princess Ailanui from the Black Cauldron in a lot of early iterations of the script. And some people have brought her up and asked why.
Oh, that is awesome.
Cut. I remember. Which is a bummer. That one was the last one that I had to cut. We started with 22 princesses in the show.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
And we had to whittle it down to 14, which is still a lot, as my director and my showrunner are finding me. But that one was hard. It was hard to cut Ailanui. She's probably the most obscure one that people request.
Wow. All right. It seems that all the princesses that you have in there are super engaged in the game and in their roles. Out of costume, are they really similar to the characters that they're portraying on screen?
It depends. There's a couple of actors. Callie, who plays our wild magic sorcerer, Rowan, who plays the arcane spellcasting rogue, and Joanna Burt, who plays our cleric, and of course Jessica, who plays our wizard, our necromancer. Strong character choices that I was able to essentially write for them. And so I include parts of their personality, but just also parts of what they're good at as far as actors, what they can portray. Callie is not much of a space cadet as her character is. She's incredibly smart. It takes a very smart person to play someone who is that slow. So it's less about whether they're similar to their characters, and more a lot of these actors chose their princess. So it's a character that they identify with and that they're good at playing.
Which is really an interesting way to kind of take yourself out of yourself and put yourself in a princess that you've always enjoyed and then make her your own. And I love the Sleeping Beauty character because she keeps falling asleep. And I thought that was really adorable because that's totally how I see her, as just constantly nodding off. And Ariel, that she can't talk. I thought that was extremely brilliant. And she has just the whiteboard, which I thought was really funny. I have always been a huge fan of Aurora. She's my favorite Disney princess, but I loved all of them. Like, every single one has their own personality. The fact that Leia comes in prepared, already have read your PDF. it was really funny and it was witty. And that's why I think the series is really relatable to a lot of people, because it's funny. I laughed. My 10-year-old daughter laughed. My husband laughed. You know, we laughed, and it was really good to laugh. I don't think we get a lot of that these days. So we're just going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk about a book that just came out over April entitled Egric by Warwick Helm. when the people living under the protection of Lord Valrith and Father Osherot are threatened by a most ancient evil, it is only a forest lad called Egric who can save them. Find out how Egric does this in the new novel by Warwick Hill at www.thethreelittlesisters.com. And we're back with Kaylee. So Kaylee, what fairy tales inspired the games played by Damsels in Dice? Obviously, we know some of the characters that are in there. We have Aurora, Ariel. Did you base it on more the traditional fairy tales, like the ones from Grimm, or did you look at the more modernized version, like the Disney-fied version?
It's a mix of both, for sure. So the characterizations themselves, I do a lot of callbacks to where people will recognize them best from, the more modern ideas of them. There's a lot of jokes and callbacks to those, just because they're fun. Adventure itself that the princesses are running for them, I've actually written out that whole game that the princesses are playing. It's very meta. That is inspired a lot by different Grimm's fairy tales I've read, different other more modern, darker fairy tales, taking inspiration from as many little as I can, which is just the mark of a game master. We steal and we steal and we steal to try and build our own story.
If you have a preference on what you enjoy reading, is it personally? Do you prefer the Grimm's for other versions or more the Disney-fied versions?
And I have to choose?
If you had to choose. If you want a desert island and all you had was one book. No. Yeah, if you had to choose between, you know, reading the more classical tales or the more modern ones, what do you prefer? The ones that are more darker and deep or the ones that are more, I would say, more like kid-friendly and sort of gloss over the somewhat darker elements?
Honestly, my major preference is always going to be a good modern retelling in spotlight that combines the two. So bringing, because like you said before, a lot of the Grimm's fairy tales or the original stories, they don't focus on the female as the protagonist most of the time. It's just not. And I'm so much more interested in that kind of story being told. And a lot of films took that.
Yeah. Plus they're extremely dark. And if any parent has ever read, you know, my husband was kind of taken aback when we first had our daughter and I cracked open a copy of the Grimm's Brothers version of Cinderella. He had actually never heard that she had, or the stepsisters had cut off their heel and their pieces of foot to fit into the shoe. And so he was just mortified. He was like, I've never heard this version of Cinderella before. And I said, oh yeah, they're all like this. Like, in every single one, there's some sort of something happens to the girl, whether it's like mutilation or she dies or she gets poisoned or you would swear the Grimm's brothers had it out for women, but they didn't. And these are just traditional folk type archetypes of women. So I find it kind of fascinating to read the older ones and then the new ones and see what real differences have occurred. If I had a choice, you know, between the modern ones that I like more than the older ones, I really liked Elsa in Frozen more than I liked the original Snow Queen in the Hans Christian Andersen version, only because I think she's two different characters and really not the same. I think she's almost a hybrid of the queen from that story mixed with, you know, the one from Narnia. It's kind of a mix of the two. And so I really love to kind of, I'm more like, I like the dark ones. Give me the dark, the creepy ones that are obscure and weird and have these like weird undercurrents of fear and suspicion and everybody's afraid of everyone and what's that thing? And then reading the light ones and going like, wow, there's such a difference between what they thought was scary then and what we think is scary now. But it's fascinating when I talk to other people about this, like what they enjoy more, you know, the old ones or the new ones or a combination of both. And I think that, you know, that's just interesting from my own personal perspective. How much fun is it for you to play Belle? What do you like her specifically about a princess?
I mean, she's in my top two as far as princesses go. I'm half Chinese, and so Mulan has been my favorite princess forever. And originally I was like, oh, well, I want to play Mulan. And I realized, oh, I should probably be the game master. And it doesn't make sense for Mulan to do that. The one that makes the most sense is the character that loves books, that loves to tell stories, basis of her whole personality. And that really only be the one princess. And so getting to really inhabit that and channel my love for storytelling with her love for stories and books and adventure. So fun. And you never want to stop.
And do you find that she's the best suited to really run the game because of that, because of her interest in kind of exploring, you know, outside of her little town, her sense of adventure, her wanting to do these things? Is that what makes her ideal to run the games?
Without a doubt.
Okay. Awesome. As the writer for the series, how do you come up with these ideas? I mean, you've already kind of touched on the fact that you are a fairy tale reader and that you basically, you know, get a lot of your inspiration from there. But where else do these ideas come from?
The way that I tend to phrase is just based off of tropes and jokes and common things that other people will immediately see and be like, oh, I identify with that. And I like to pull from fans of the princess characters and the princess properties and fans of RPGs, and then mashing those together and to position there's a new joke that relates to both of those fandoms, and then seeing where people like me who are fans of both really relating to those people and maybe introducing like, look at these two super cool things. Building a story around those is really how that starts.
Wow. It's amazing to hear what people's process is. I mean, as a publisher, we are always interested in hearing the story behind the story and what it is that people are inspired to write from. So how long does it take you to write a script for Damsels in Dice?
Well, so the first season is totally written. Think of it in terms of episodes. So it was September and then October, November, December. It took me like 6 months to get the first season written, episodes. And then, like I mentioned before, we had to and really optimize it for a YouTube show for that first initial development of the script, the whole season.
Sweet. And do other damsels take part in script writing?
We don't take part in script writing. We do have rehearsals before we shoot an episode. And our director, Ryan Parma, who is brilliant, really likes to run some improv sessions right before to just get everyone comfortable in the characters and see how people relate to each other. And then after reading the script a couple of times, he gives the actors the opportunity to improv within the confines of the script. And if there's a response that they want to have or a joke they want to make, allowing them the freedom to play within that framework and see if anything comes of it. So there have been times where I know our Leia Sage made a joke that ended up in the script, and our Megara has made a joke that ended up in the script. So they definitely contribute, but not in the initial writing process.
Okay. What's the most fun thing about doing Damsels in Dice, if you had to pick one thing?
The most fun thing? Getting to be creative with all of my friends is all I've ever wanted to do. It's my dream, and it's how I want to structure my whole career. So really being able to call my best friend and say, oh, let me show you this line I just wrote for you, or knock on my roommate's door and be like, hey, how's the music going for episode 2? And then looking to social media and seeing pictures from parents of their girls holding character sheets or dolls set up just like the princesses around a table playing Dungeons and Dragons. That makes me literally weep. I am so touched and happy. Those are the most fun things for sure.
That must be really incredible to see, you know, them trying to emulate you. I mean, that's the biggest honor is when our children, you know, they emulate from others, and to have such strong role models is something I wish that I had had throughout my time as a mother. We've had struggles finding some good positive female role models, especially a few years ago. There wasn't a lot, but yeah, when there was that, when they did come up or when they were there, my daughter would take straight to them and try to be them. I mean, I have little videos of her drumming on drums to this singer from Canada called Biff Naked, who was this crazy girl rock star. And, you know, she just kind of latched onto her because she saw this girl that was strong and tiny and singing. And she was like, I'm going to be a rock star too. And she would bang on drums. And it's just always fun to see children's eyes light up and they connect to people, because that really, they are really honest. And if they don't like something, they have no problem telling you straight to your face. Yeah. So I think if they're your fans, you've got it made. Is there anything about Damsels in Dice that you would like to share with us other than the things that you've shared with us today?
I mean, I guess just kind of bouncing off of the thing that children can relate to as well. The idea that is the most important thing to me for the show is how many different women we have represented on around that table, different types of women, not just people of color, which was incredibly important to me. All of our actors are cast racially and culturally appropriately for the princesses, which was my priority when we were casting. Also, the idea that some women are very feminine, some are not particularly feminine, but it doesn't matter because they're all friends, they're all playing this game. And it doesn't take a specific kind of person to be a princess, and it doesn't take a specific kind of person to be a nerd or a gamer. And you can be both of those things at once. And it doesn't, you don't need to be what society, I think, thinks of when they think of Dungeons and Dragons, still, even with the current upsurge in popularity. Like that SNL skit that aired last week? People still think of Dungeons and Dragons as something that, you know, boys play in their mom's basement, and the gamers are so much more interesting and creative and colorful. Viewers' permission to be who they are and to love the things that they love. Our mission statement, it's why we make this silly parody, even though it's fun, but I think we also want to have an impact on our community.
And that is something that we believe in too. I believe that giving a voice to everyone, no matter what background they come from, no matter what nationality they come from, no matter what culture they come from, having a diverse amount of opinions, having a diverse amount of people around you, having all different religions, faiths, whatever, it helps you understand your world a lot better and engage with each other in many different ways. And we just really can't thank you guys enough for taking part in this podcast with us. We are so thrilled that we're focusing on fairy tales this month. We can't even contain the excitement of what we're going to be having in store. And I just want to thank again, Kaylee Bray from Damsel's Dice and Everything Nice. You can find out all about their lovely YouTube series on diceandeverythingnice.com. And we will have the links to that when this podcast on Indiegogo, and help support such an amazing YouTube series like this and create the mission, and keep it going to inspire others to be their best selves. And again, Kaylee, I want to thank you so much for taking part in today's podcast.
Very welcome. I had a blast.
All right. And with that in mind, we want to thank you all for tuning in to Nevermore the podcast. And we look forward to next time when we will be discussing our first in the series of 5 during Fairy Tale Month. We will be reviewing 5 top fairy tales, the first one being Cinderella and the Glass Slipper. What does this mean? And what does the relationship between girls and princesses really come down to? All that and more coming soon from the Three Little Sisters. You can also catch a copy of the book by Leslie Sussman, called Bayou Terror. Deep in the middle of Louisiana, murder is afoot. Come find out all about the book, including what suspects are in mind. Do you dare to fall into the bayou? I don't know. Find out more from ThreeLittleSisters.com. That's www.thethreelittlesisters.com.